Hello and welcome to Adam Ferenz' Cathode Ray Mission. I'm Adam Ferenz, and I'm joined tonight by Doc. Say hi.
Hi, I'm here, sort of.
Carl Kafer, say hello.
Hello, Carl Kafer.
And Alan Bryan, say howdy.
Hi, all you out there in podcast land. Sorry. Hello.
Yeah. Well, you guys will see that he's a nutty guy. But tonight our discussion is going to center on the TV Western, but specifically how it rose and fell and what's come after the fall. Now, you know, the TV Western, of course, grew out of the radio Western. And the radio Western had its advantages and its disadvantages. It had very specific things it did. And a great example of a radio Western would have been, say, the Lone Ranger. And, of course, they did a TV series of that. But that was not the only Western that we would have in the early days. We would go on to have many, many more. In fact, according to some research I did, at one point in the 50s, I believe it says one in every three dramas on television was a Western, which is fairly incredible, even given the limited number of stations and shows on the air at that point. So, what
for
I
nowadays,
want to
ask, one in every five is a one in every three is a reality TV show. So, you know,
which,
it comes and goes.
Which is of course a topic for another day, and in my opinion, a fairly sad topic. But
sad is the word.
But you know, we have this whole thing where, by the end of the 50s, the TV Western was like the king of TV, next to quiz shows and the nightly news. It was everything. It was everything when it came to drama on television. And yet by the end of the 60s, the TV Western had really fallen off the map. And a lot of people point to the end of Bonanza and the end of Gunsmoke as the end of the TV Western as it was once known. And to a degree, that's true. But there was this whole glory period from about 50 through about 65 where the Western was the biggest thing on television, pretty much. And that's what we're going to discuss, that rise and then that fall and why it fell. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys, Alan and Carl. Why do you think the TV Western rose, and why do you think it fell? Do you have any specific ideas on what went wrong and what went right?
Alan, take this one first, okay?
I'm going to, yes. The way I saw it was the Westerns were emulating a lot of what was happening on the big screen in theaters. And you had two things going on a lot. You had certain genres that played well in theaters. You had Westerns, you had war movies, and then they had died out a bit in the 40s, but in the 50s some monster films are coming back. But it was easy, and in radio, you also had crime dramas on radio and Westerns on radio. But it was the easiest thing for a television producer to say, oh, let's do a Western. And because, you know, they could borrow costumes and sets from movies that had already existed, and they just have to go out, you know, into some back lot in California or build some simple set, and poof, you got one, you know. And it wasn't they recycled scripts from radio, as Gunsmoke did. They recycled scripts from movies. It was an easy thing to do, but they were emulating what was popular on the big screen. Now, war films are popular on the big screen, but nobody wanted war on television just yet. That didn't come to the 60s when you started seeing combat and a couple of the war dramas. And cop shows, while they were prominent in the 50s and 60s on TV, the West appealed more to the television audience of the time. In the 50s, the TV audience was more kids than adults. Adults were going to movies, and they were going to the theater, you know, and they were going to concerts. And I speak more classical than rock and roll. But kids, well, a lot of them were left home with a babysitter and to watch TV. So programming, as I see it in the 50s and early 60s, was more geared towards children in a lot of ways. And yes, Gunsmoke was what they called an adult Western, but much of anything else, Cisco Kid, Lone Ranger, you know, they
Zorro.
Were geared towards Zorro. They were geared towards a younger audience. And they were cheaper, I think cheaper to produce a Western than it was to produce something else. Yes, they did have some space dramas in the 50s, a few, but they were geared towards kids and they were simplistic. But, you know, like I say, if you shot a crime drama, you had to shoot it in the city primarily, and you had to get film permits to shoot in the city. You had to rent cars. You had to rent buildings. A Western, you're doing it on a back lot, or you're going out into the desert area and shooting among some rocks and, you know, a few valleys and such. So you didn't have a location problem.
And there's plenty of
rentals were cheap.
And there's plenty of stock footage, yeah, too.
And you had stock footage. You could reuse a lot of stock footage, especially people riding on horseback and a lot of things. So I see a Western was, for television purposes, it was reminiscent of what was on the big screen and what was simplest to produce at the time. And that's what, but the thing about it is, a lot of people from theater who was doing Western movies came into the Western TV shows, and the writers came there too. And then so you got some good and the people from radio came into the TV shows. So you got some good quality writing. They found some good actors, and they turned out some very good shows for a number of years. Yeah, a few clunkers, but when you look back at it, look at all the Westerns now that are on DVD and Blu-ray. Well, mostly on DVD, very few on Blu-ray, but they hold up pretty well.
Yep.
So, and if you can get that Lone Ranger series or a couple of seasons that are on DVD, they're watchable. They're very entertaining. They're not,
yeah,
you know, it's not like you're going to say, oh, that sucked, you know. It's not like you're watching season 3 of Gilligan's Island and you're bored to death. No, they were entertaining. They had a lot of good stuff in them. So I see it as television was basically doing what they saw in the theater, what they saw on the big screen, and just reproducing it, but for a younger audience, you know, to keep them entertained.
Yep, and I think that there's some fair points there, and I'm going to hit a couple of those, but let's first turn it over to Carl and see what he has to say.
Well, it's funny. I was never a huge Western fan. I should probably say that first, but my father was. My father was the biggest fan of John Wayne. If you take a look at the Westerns that were being done in the 30s onwards, you know, they're you say it's simple, you know, you say they were for children or that, but there's this simplistic sense of good and bad, and it was very, very, you know, ingrained in the Western, and it was what people were used to, you know, and seeing. You don't see gradations of that until well into the 50s with Bud Bedecher and some of the films that he did. But the thing is, you had a hero, he was going, you know, whether it was a bounty hunter, whether it was this or that, he was going to catch the bad guy. We all know that. It was comfortable. And so the Western was comfortable. I wouldn't say it was specifically for children, but there was this sense that, you know, good was going to deal with evil and triumph over evil and would go on to the next adventure. And it was just, you know, it's like a good comfort food, like going to a to get a good hamburger or something like that, you know. And that's why the popularity really, really hit, for at least in my opinion, because you start with Tom Mix, you go through all these Roy Rogers. There was an Audie Murphy show in the 50s, and so many things. But there, but also, you know, you're right in terms of the cost. But one of the things that happened over the years is that the cost of Westerns went up too, renting horses. You know, all of the in 1957, I think, or 56, the people, the stuntmen, you know, basically went on strike, and they got more money and so on and so forth. So you got this you know, more and more cost involved that would put it up with a show like Johnny Staccato, which was done in New York City or something like that. And so, you know, things changed too. And at the end of the period, you know, once you get into the 60s, you know, and you start with the unrest and that sort of thing, the
yep.
simplistic view then starts to fall apart, because then you start getting the acid Westerns. You get the spaghetti Westerns, which are no longer, you know, black and white. They're all shades of gray. And so I think that the comfort end of the Westerns at the end of the period, you know, that fell apart. And so it wasn't conducive to television anymore at that point, because it was still family oriented in the 60s. So it went particularly to comedies. But that's my thought about, you know, an overview of the Western TV Western.
Well, to bring both you guys' points together, I think that one thing that has occurred to me is the drawing by television of what was popular in the theater. And, you know, we went from things that were very simplistic, black and white, a very moralistic world, a very binary world presented on television that reflected the Westerns in the theaters. Well, we had that changing in the theaters, and therefore television, which is always, or at least network television, has always gone for, you know, the least offensive thing. What's going to be the most common denominator? What's going to get the most people to watch? What's going to offend the least amount of people? And when you have these Westerns that start reflecting darker themes, stranger themes, I think they didn't quite know what to do. But the thing is there's a couple of correlations there. These Westerns that you once had were no longer what was popular, and the Western that was still somewhat popular had changed and really become something else in the theater. Television wasn't ready for that, but television decided they were going to stick with what was, what had worked. And I think that you look at, of course, it's been said many times before, but Vietnam, the civil rights movement in the late 50s and throughout the 60s, and you have an audience that maybe wasn't quite willing to watch these simple shows anymore, and the numbers started to decline because the audience just wasn't there. I mean, they had good numbers up through a certain point in the 60s, but by the late 60s, early 70s, the Westerns that were on the air, with a couple of exceptions that we'll get to later, were still pretty much the Westerns that had been on the air 10 and 12 years earlier, only in color. And I think that that definitely is part of the decline, is the way that they remained inert. Do you think that's fair
right.
to say?
Agreed. Agreed. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for me. I mean, and one of those exceptions that I was going to mention, you know, you have shows with a little more of a humorous bent, shows like Maverick, shows like, oh, God, it just went out of my mind, the one with Miguelito Loveless.
Wild West. Which is a sci-fi steampunk.
Steampunk.
And we'll get into that, too.
Yeah.
Yes, and, you know, these shows, of course, had characters. I mean, Brett Maverick, sure, he's a good guy, but he's not a straight arrow. And in the Wild Wild West, you had two special agents, but, you know, they were a little bit like Bond in that they were good, but they would bend rules.
Well, Wild Wild West was an effort to combine the James Bond craze with the Western. Straight up.
And fairly successful for the most part. At least it was damn entertaining.
Yes, it was. That's what it was. That's why they did it. They were like, well, James Bond is putting people in the theaters, you know, and they decided to combine Western with, you know, with spies, you know, and gadgets. So it worked. I'm surprised you didn't get more Westerns of that nature, like somebody else doing a similar one, in some way, you know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but you know, you only saw the one. But heck, I think if somebody thought of it could have. That doesn't mean there weren't. Heck, we don't know. There could have been somebody proposing a series of similar nature out there. We just have no knowledge of it.
Right, right. And, you know, and it's not like there weren't attempts to do a more refined Western, but they didn't last long. And I do want to bring up a couple of those and see if you guys agree. The Rifleman and the Westerner. And I'll let you guys run at that.
Well, the Rifleman succeeded. I don't know why the Westerner failed. The Rifleman, for as violent as it was, and as many times that he killed people, even though he was trying not to, now he didn't want to, it had a charm, and it worked somehow. I've got the whole series, and it's wonderful to watch. And Chuck Connors is just fabulous in it. The Westerner I have also, I don't know why it failed. I don't know why it only lasted a half year. I thought it could have went on more. I'm not sure why people were watching it. I mean, it wasn't promoted right. It didn't somehow it didn't catch on as well.
They
I'm not
didn't
sure.
know what to do with Sam Peckinpah.
Right, and I was going to ask Carl if Carl wants to tell the Peckinpah story. Carl, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody why the Westerner failed because of the great Sam Peckinpah.
Well,
I don't know if Peckinpah was also involved in the Rifleman.
Hey, one at a time, please.
Okay, go, Alan. You go first.
I just wanted to say Peckinpah was involved with the Rifleman too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was okay, but he was one of many. He was a director.
Yes.
The Westerner was his baby. He was producing it.
Right.
He was directing it. You know, he was selling it. And so the whole idea with the Westerner, I don't know the specific story, perhaps Adam does, but I will say this. You've got somebody who is really pushing boundaries. Also is basically very hard to work with and a heavy drinker.
Right.
And so you've got somebody very difficult to work with, and so that was definitely partially the problem with Westerner. Now I have seen not all of the episodes, but there are at least two or three on
YouTube, and they're wonderful. But one of the things you can you see about it is it's not black and white. And I think that's part of the problem, too, because what was that, 57?
Right.
58?
No, it was later than that.
Okay.
It was late 50s.
Okay. But the thing is, it's late 50s. He's 3 years, 4 years away from right and wild country. And there's definitely not this black and white. And so I don't know if audiences were ready for it at that point.
Right, and I think the other reason, and when I say that it failed in part because of Peckinpah, I didn't mean artistically or even really commercially, but as much as the network having faith in it. The network, and you mentioned that he was a prickly sort that was difficult to get along with. Well, Peckinpah, both with the Rifleman and the Westerner, he kept wanting to kill everybody off, and the network was like, well, how the hell are we going to promote this? If you keep killing everybody off, we need to have stars. We need to have a cast that the audience can identify with and follow week to week with new stories. You can't keep killing them off. And that's what he kept trying to do, was kill them off or send them away.
The Westerner was 1960, and it was black and white. I don't know where you're getting color from.
I was thinking that, no, he meant black and not black and white as in morally and ethically.
No, I thought he meant it was a color TV show.
No.
Never mind.
I was thinking it was a 50, that it ran in the 59-60 season. That's why I was thinking it was late 50s.
Actually, it ran only from September 60 to December 60. It didn't even get into 61.
So I was off by a year.
So 30, yeah. But
that just shows you that at the end of the 50s, beginning of the 60s, right at the height of the Western, when the Western was absolute king on television, Peckinpah tried something different, and the network was like, oh, fuck this.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, there's one show I want to mention. Now, when I was married to Vicki, her mother, there was the Encore Western, and she loved Western. So she and I would sometimes sit down and watch these old shows. And one of the ones I really like, and I want your guys' opinion in it, is Richard Boone as Paladin. Now, that to me wasn't exactly a morally black and white show either. That had some gradations to it, which I really enjoyed. And I loved Richard Boone in it.
Yeah, it was a great series. I've got the whole series on DVD, and I've watched the whole thing at least once. And it's very entertaining, but while he was a gun for hire, he also had morals. So, you know.
Well, yeah, to me, it was always sort of like a private detective. You know, the private detective goes into this world, and he has morals, but the world around him doesn't.
I'd say he was more of a private detective bodyguard for hire sort of guy than he wasn't a hired gun, as in, you know, going to kill somebody.
Right.
Not that people probably, I'm sure people tried to hire him in that fashion. But.
Yep. Now, Paladin's a show where I've seen a couple of episodes, but it's never been one that I sat down and watched a lot of whereas I have done things like with the Rifleman. I've watched those three or four episodes that are on YouTube of the Westerner and things like, you know, Have Gun, Will Travel. I've probably, just because I liked it when I was a kid, I've seen every episode of the old Zorro. Hell, I saw every episode of the new Zorro that ran on the Family Channel back in the early 90s. I actually thought that was a fun version. But, there were so many Westerns that we could sit here and list off favorites for 2 hours.
Yes. If you want to borrow some Have Gun Will Travel or Westerner or Zorro, I've got those. You know, you can always.
Oh yeah, no, we'll get to that after the show, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, we've got a lot of interesting other shows. So I'm going to ask you guys, and I don't really have one. I just want to ask you guys: is there an unheralded gem from the 50s or 60s that you think is worthy of more notice, and that perhaps even if the TV Western had pursued that style of Western, might have founded a new audience and kept the Western going as a viable vehicle into the 80s and 90s rather than the halting, okay, we're going to get a Dr. Quinn here and a Briscoe County there and the young writers there that we've had since. So, Carl, I'll start with you. What one or two shows are a real gem from the 50s and 60s that you'd like to bring to light?
Well, basically, I just did one, which would be Paladin, which I love. And the other one I think I would mention would be Wanted Dead or Alive.
Ooh.
Which is the Steve McQueen one, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason I like that one is because Vicky's mom, Georgia, just loves Steve McQueen. And so we would watch it, and she'd talk about Steve. So to me, that was entertaining. It might have been because of who I was watching it with.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy that also. But to
be
honest, just to finish up, I was born in 58, so this is a little bit before my time. But again, when I was growing up, my father was such a Western person that whenever there was a Western on, he would turn it on, and invariably I got very, very soured on Westerns for many, many years. So, you know, the stuff that we're talking about this period of time, I don't know nearly as well, okay? But I do know something. So that's what I would say there. Alan, you were about to say something. I'm sorry.
I don't have a particular, you know, one that I think, you know, could have came around or, you know, sparked the genre. I thought the genre had played out pretty well by the late 60s. You know, they had tried every format you could get and virtually a lot of different options, you know. I mean, you had your rifleman, you had your Branded, you know, your former Civil War guy. You had
Branded. I do have to say about Branded, if I can interrupt. Larry Cohen came up with that one. And I do love Branded. I forgot about Branded. Okay. Go ahead.
And you had your, you know, your Guns of Will Sonnet, which was, you know, your Quest thing, and you had the Virginian, and, you know, and you had your Big Valley, which was your female version of Bonanza, you know, and just for the record, I'm not a Bonanza fan whatsoever. The only good thing about Bonanza was the theme song. And I was bringing this up with Adam before. When I was a kid and I would read Fantastic Four, I thought it was funny that the Thing and Johnny were acting like Hoss and Little Joe. Then I realized later that Bonanza came before the Fantastic Four. Maybe Stan was using their personalities to mimic what was in Reed and Johnny. Because if you look at the way Ben Grimm was drawn, he could have been, you know, almost the character of Dan Blocker. So there, whatever. I'm just shooting off theories here, but.
Well, I can buy it because Stan Lee said he liked Westerns.
Yeah, and as I was, I discussed it with Adam at length yesterday. I didn't like Bonanza because Bonanza looked fake. It was that back, you know, that backyard was a always looked like a set. It never looked, it was always a goofy with the Hoss and Little Joe conflict, and Lauren Green getting his dander up, you know, and all the time, and treating Hop Singh like, you know, he was a, well, what he was, you know, pretty much a, just a sort of a slave Chinaman. And I don't, to this day, I still don't like Bonanza. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. It was to me, the worst Western ever made. The premise of it, okay, the guy's got three sons from three wives who happen to die on the way out west or after they got there. Okay, that's a dumb idea. He owns half of Nevada. Okay, how the hell did that happen? And, you know, and they got all the money in the world, and whereas every other Western, pretty much, not every other. Okay, Big Valley, they had money, too. Cimarron Strip, they had some money. But at most of the Westerns, you know, people are, you know, they're struggling to make ends meet, you know. Nobody was rich on Gunsmoke, except a bad guy or two. Nobody was rich on The Rifleman, except the occasional bad guy coming in, or, you know. So it's, Bonanza was pure fantasy, and it was, yeah, it was always in color, but geez, I'm sorry. Once Adam, and I, by the time I started watching it, Adam was already gone, and when I saw him in reruns later, I'm like, geez, he was the best part of the show. So, Dan Blocker's a nice guy, and I like the character, but I didn't like the way the show was written, and I can hardly bring myself to watch it today. So, there you go.
Okay, so Carl, what do you have to say to that?
Well, you know what? I'm with him. To be honest, the Westerns in the 60s, which again, as I've said before, my father would make us watch them because he, you know, that was his thing. I would generally leave the room. So the Big Valley, all of those. Now I will say there was one TV Western during the 60s that I liked, and invariably my father didn't like it. And it didn't run very long. How well do you know Hondo, the TV show?
I'm aware it
didn't last very long. I've seen a few episodes on YouTube, but Hondo was one of those short-lived deals.
Yep.
Right. But I will say this. I remember seeing it, and 67 was a big year for me on TV because there was a lot of things that influenced me. And this one was the first one that I saw. You know, the basic idea is he's a Confederate soldier who left during the Civil War and went out to California, and his Indian bride was killed by the cavalry out there, and so he's a lone wolf. And so there's this sort of feel of what Outlaw Josie Wales, which is what, you know, that sort of feel to it. And I liked it, again, because it wasn't cut and dry. It wasn't, you know, good and bad, black and white. And so that was one of the few ones that I did like during that time. But otherwise, most of what you're talking about, not a fan.
It only lasted 17 episodes, and I liked Hondo. I did like Hondo, and I remember watching a few of most of those episodes.
Before I forget to mention it, that Hondo was, of course, written. There were several episodes written by Louis L'Amour and James Edward Grant. So you had some real good Western short story and novelists doing scripts.
Yeah. It was only on during the fall. And I'll tell you something, too. Okay, 1967, I said, was big. So summer 1967, they ran one of my favorite shows, which was the Larry Cohen show called Coronet Blue. Okay? When Coronet Blue goes off the air, in comes Hondo. Same slot. And so I got hooked on that for and then it was gone in December. So, you know, two shows, very short-lived. I remember watching them back then. I was 9 years old at the time,
mm-hmm.
almost 10. And both of those hit me real hard, and I really liked them, and they were both gone. And that got me to the point where I never trusted network TV again, and invariably the shows that I love are always canceled. So there you go. It started in 1960.
The same thing happened to me. We're going to have to do a show on favorite short-lived series, but we could do a bunch of that. We could do a whole podcast on that where that's every week.
Oh, hell yeah.
But, no, I mean, so, you know, I've always said, and to wrap up the Bonanza thing, and this will be the last word on it for now, I've always said that Bonanza was a cast in search of a script. Whereas I think Gunsmoke had both a cast, especially consistently good guest stars, and solid writing. Sometimes great writing, but usually solid. I mean, Gunsmoke kind of became that dependable show that even at its creakiest, it was never what I would describe as a bad series. But I don't know if you guys would agree or disagree on that.
I got to correct you about one thing. Louis L'Amour created the character of Hondo, but he didn't write for the series.
Yeah, I did misspeak myself. He created the character, but he wasn't like actually putting in scripts.
He was not writing the series. Sorry, I'm just saying he did not write the series. He was only credited for character creation.
For character creation.
If we're going to put this out there to the public, I don't want the public thinking, wow, a TV show written by Louis L'Amour. No.
No, but Louis L'Amour, it's not his only show. Now, he did do it. He did have a pilot around the same time that Hondo came out that did not even go beyond the script stage. But I can't find the name for it. I just found out that he actually did have a pilot for a series, and I cannot find out what the name of it was or anything beyond just, boom, it was going to be there. I think that would have been cool. I mean, you know, now, do I think Louis L'Amour is like the greatest Western writer ever? He's definitely the most prolific. I think there were probably a few that were better. Especially some of the ones that have come all over the last 40 or 50 years. But he is...
he created the character.
What he is?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just said, and he is what he is in terms of Western history, but go on.
But he created the character in a short story and then in a novel, and he was credited for the story on the movie, but he did not write for the movie. That was a James Grant screenplay. So, you know, I don't know what L'Amour did as far as television work, but it wasn't Hondo's not one of them. Whether it was okay. All right.
He was involved with it only in terms of the character creation, and I believe that he, and you can look this up and see if my information was wrong, but I believe he had a consultant credit.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
He would have been very old at the time.
Well, he died in 88, so he still had 20 years to go. So, you know, he probably could have. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to go that deep into looking about it. But you could be right. I could be crazy.
But no, there's plenty of other shows, but I do want to talk about Gunsmoke a little bit. We can't, you know, go the whole time and not talk about the impact of Gunsmoke. So, you know, Gunsmoke, everybody talks about it having like three and sometimes even four different eras. Some people even argue that it became an anthology series, which I see the argument, but I disagree that it was actually an anthology.
Well, not an anthology series, but it did have what I call three or four arcs to it. And, you know, I'll give you my assessment of it. You had the half-hour series, which ran for six seasons, and that was, since they were half-hour in black and white, they were a bit more Matt Dillon-centric.
Yep.
Then you went into... You went into 5 years that were black and white and an hour long, and they were more Dodge City characters, because then you started getting episodes, you know, like, well, for example, the episode that introduced Burt Reynolds, Quint Asper character, you know, and you got episodes centering around Kitty or Doc or Chester, you know, or Festus. And so in that, in the first 11 years, you went from Matt Dillon-centric episodes to Dodge City, the main cast being more featured. And then you get into the color, the last 10 years. The last 10 years, it's kind of a weird thing, because to me, it was like 4 years of that were Dodge City and main cast based. And then, yeah, I think the last 5 years, it wasn't an anthology series as much, but it focused on people who were coming into Dodge, you know,
yep.
New people, new settlers, and it would focus around, and Matt would would be involved with them, or Doc would be involved with them, or Festus or Kitty would be involved with them, you know, and it was, something like an anthology series, but not to where the main cast wasn't even featured. But there was an episode or two where, oh, Matt's off taking a prisoner to, you know, Steubenville or something, you know, and you had that. But the thing is, James Arness, as he got older and he was in so many episodes, because they were doing, you know, anywhere from 36 to 39 episodes a year in that first decade. So it was a lot of toll on him. So as he got older, he had to cut back in his time on screen, and I'm sure the other members of the cast wanted a little more time on screen. So when they got it, and that's so Gunsmoke did metamorphose from a half-hour Western featuring a marshal to a drama about Dodge City featuring people from Dodge, to a drama featuring people from Dodge City, you know, the main cast and other folks who had settled there. So that's a show that matured. And while it had bits of humor with Doc and Festus, it never got to the point where it was overly bonanza god or illogical or anything. You had the guys who did the radio show involved with the TV show, and you had the guy that created the whole thing involved the whole time, and he knew what he was doing. Yeah, they recycled some shows from radio for TV or expanded on them, but still it all worked. And there's not that many clunkers in the Gunsmoke canon that were to bad episodes. And then the guest stars, you know, like Tony Mason, CBS brought in the guest stars. And you had a lot of young talent show up on the show that knew what they were doing and interested in, you know, and could bring in the audience, you know. So I give them their props. They Gunsmoke for 20 years was top of its game, produced five movies after that, and its legacy is set in stone. It's one of the greatest TV shows ever.
Well, one of my favorite Gunsmoke episodes, and then I'll let Carl have his piece, was a Festus-centered episode where these nuns brought these kids around, and these kids, it turns out, belonged to the local drunk trapper, and I cannot for the life of me remember the actor's name, but he was a fairly well-known character actor at the time, and it's just a real good look, a real unflinching look at selfishness, cowardice and, you know, the effect of alcoholism, not just on the person, but everyone around them. And to me, it showed what Gunsmoke did when it was firing on all cylinders. I'm not sure if either of you remember that episode from that description, but, you know, Ken Curtis, he was phenomenal in his part. I'm sorry. He really does deserve the love people give him.
I agree. That's one of the shows I actually grew into when I was, you know, with Vicky's mom, because we would watch that, and then I reassessed it. Another one, too, I think we should at least mention, which is a true anthology thing, different casts each week, was Death Valley Days.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
which I liked.
Yeah, that,
I didn't.
Well, that endured a couple of different eras. It had the 50s, and I've got the first three seasons of the 50s, and then it had in the 60s where it was hosted by Ronald Reagan, and yes, it was that show was really good, and was well done. I have no problems with that. And the other anthology show we know about is, or of a sorts, it's kind of an anthology. It was Wagon Train, but
yep. But speaking about young talent, both in front of and behind the camera, we have to mention, you know, you had Rawhide with Clint Eastwood. And, of course, you know, and just before I forget, we have to mention Bonanza, because Bonanza had an actor in a small supporting role, David Canary. Now, David Canary, and this is another reason why I say that this was a cast in search of a script, because while his character was never going to be a big thing, they just never gave him anything to do. And if you watch him in that show, you're going to think, yeah, whatever. He was a serviceable actor. Well, years later, he would get cast on the daytime drama All My Children as Adam Chandler, and it was later revealed that Adam had a twin who was potentially mentally challenged, but some have argued that the character was actually supposed to be mildly autistic instead. And you watch Canary on that show, and he won several Emmys for that role. He is a marvelous actor, and you see that it was absolutely just not being given the material. I don't think anyone could have done truly great work, and that's not to disparage anybody that was on that show, because they all did good work. But I don't think that, you know, when the script isn't there, you're not going to have a way to truly, truly shine. But I think that Bonanza, it struck a chord with a certain section of the audience, and I think the family feeling with the sons, you know, made some people feel the warm fuzzies. But I think we're all in agreement that that's kind of the big dud Western for the three of us. So, well, let's be honest, the theme song is great. Although, let's also be honest, Rawhide had a heck of a theme song too, as the Blues Brothers can attest.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so did Paladin, actually, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Bat Masterson, too.
Yeah.
I love Bat
That's
Masterson.
That's a good one, too.
But this that just reminded me, there were things like, you know, there was also things in the late 60s and early 70s, and we got into movies much later like Little Big Man. But, you know, in the 60s, you saw the growing Native American movement and a recognition that, you know, perhaps, and I put air quotes around perhaps, depictions in Westerns on TV and radio and in the theaters had not been positive, shall we say. Well, no shit. But you
not
have...
Not even realistic.
No. But, you know, you have to wonder if these young kids that were expected to grow into the next generation of viewer, you know, they unlike their parents, they were starting to see that, you know, maybe there's something wrong with these depictions. And you have, you know, all the Native Americans being loyal sidekicks or evildoers, and that just wasn't good. I would just have to say that.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but Gunsmoke was sort of a the TV show sort of whitewashed Chester, because in the radio show he was Chester Proudfoot, who was half Indian, and on the TV show he was Chester Good, who was simply had a bum leg.
Yep.
And yeah, and I don't know why they saw it necessary to change the character from half Indian to a cripple just to satisfy viewers, but it's the 50s, and that's what they did.
It's the 50s, and that's what they did. You know, I mean, it's one reason why, and I'm going to have to bring this up, you know, you also didn't see a lot of, you didn't see many depictions of black bounty hunters or cowboys in the 50s and 60s on television. And that's one
cowboys.
Thing that I think Briscoe County Jr. was in the 90s for its one season did brilliantly, having the character of Lord Bowler and treating him as a fully three-dimensional character.
Yeah, black cowboys were very, very common in the Old West, and you rarely, I don't think you ever saw one in Gunsmoke. If you did find a, if a black person did show up in Gunsmoke, it was rare, maybe probably in the later 60s. You know, it's like when you finally saw on Andy Griffith, you know, you finally had a, I think it was a phys ed teacher show up as a black actor, you know, in the seventh or eighth season, near the end of Andy Griffith's run. They said, you know, it was what they were saying back then. Oh, TV's not ready for a black lead. You know, I Spy was a rare thing. You know, and for when it came out, and when you had Bill Cosby as, you know, the co-star, and Julia came in 67, but on a Western, you didn't, think of a Western that had a...
Okay, I have to pop in here, okay? So
yeah, go ahead.
Please.
1974 comes one of the greatest comedic movies ever. And that, of course, would be Blazing Saddles.
Right.
The next year, in 1975, there was a TV pilot called Black Bart.
Yep.
Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you are. And, of course, it was not picked up. Let's also talk about another movie, which is Skin Game. Okay, well, that's the one with James Garner and Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah, I got that on DVD.
That also had a pilot in, I think, 77, which also was not picked up. So even in the 70s, they weren't going for it, even though there were movies that these things were based on. Another thing, and I just want to go through the 70s because I remember it very well. You talk about whitewashing, okay? Did you know there was a TV series based on the John Wayne movie, The Cowboys?
Yeah.
Okay,
it didn't last very long. That was a short-lived series,
right?
Too.
Right, it lasted, I think, not even a season. But how much they whitewashed that?
Oh, yeah.
It became like this cute series about these young kid cowboys who could do anything. And none of that grit or what actually happened in the film. And so it was like, God, they don't even want to try to make something with you know, some heft to it or that sort of thing. It was awful. One of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I remember watching the pilot, and I was didn't care for it, and Emily and I thought it would, the movie was way better. But you know, it's a lot of times that they try to adapt, you know, movies to TV, it failed more than it was a success. So you know, I mean, even you know, and a black character couldn't get a fair shake anyway. I mean, look at MASH. You had the black guy was in the film MASH, and they had he had the nickname of Spear Chucker. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Holy crap, is that a racist nickname? And I don't know when I first heard that, I'm like, seriously? The movie was set in the 50s. I get that. The movie's set in the Korean War era. But even to keep that name in the film, yeah, it was R-rated and all, you know, but it was still, I'm like, oh, that hurts. And now when you hear it, when you watch that and they talk Spirit Trucker Jones, I'm like, oh, that's about as bad as saying the N-word.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. you know, it's good. So.
Well, there was that, what was it, Yancey Derringer had that. What was the Indian's nickname in that?
Oh, I'm trying to. I got the series and I forgot. I'm blanking, so I'm gonna.
Wasn't it like Wapu or Wahoo? It was something that you when you look at it,
yeah.
it seems like it was supposed to be. It was intended to be mildly insulting.
Pahukatawa. I'm not making that up. It's Pahukatawa. I don't know how you spell it, but it was Pahukatawa. It was played by the actor X Brands.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there you go. Yeah, I got that on DVD. I've only watched a couple episodes of that, so I don't remember. You know, even though I bought the series, I think it was cheap at Walmart one time, you know, I don't remember watching. I didn't watch that many episodes for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Yep.
Before we wrap everything up,
I wanted to get a little bit into the later Westerns, the Westerns that came, you know, much later. You know, there was that fallow period of the late 70s and throughout the 80s. And then you had things like the revival of Zorro. And Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and Briscoe County Jr., and The Young Riders, which was about the Pony Express. And it seemed for a little while there like the Western was making somewhat of a comeback, and then it all went away, and then you had Deadwood on HBO, and there really hasn't been much since. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
You don't even have
so, Kyle, let's go ahead. Let's go start with you.
Okay, well, talk about late ones, okay? I think you got to think a little bit of the hybrids because, let's face it, McCloud, Heck Ramsey, even though they're set in modern times, they are still primarily a Western.
Well,
oh,
Heck
yeah,
Ramsey
it's
was
gold.
You know, let's not forget those, too. But that's where I go. Okay, I think one of the best things that's been on television in the past this decade is Longmire. I freaking love Longmire. And though it's not exactly a traditional Western, it's set in Wyoming. You know, it's set in rural Wyoming present day. The guy rides a horse. He's a marshal. It's more of a detective series maybe, but it's really really good. I really like Longmire. And also Justified.
Justified
is friggin' awesome.
One of the best series ever.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Oh, Justified is great.
Oh, absolutely. But I was also going to say, even though some people don't look at it as being a bit of a Western, it still had a Western feel, and that's Happen Leonard. Did you see that?
Now, funny you should mention that. We've had Joe Lansdale on the show a couple times, and Joe and I we message every so often, not often, but
I love that show.
Happen Leonard is just magnificent. It's a great series of books that he wrote, and it is set in the West. It is more of a very, very brutal.
You're not kidding.
To say the least. But man, it's wonderful. And the thing is, I love the setup because you've got it's set in the 80s, early 80s, and
mm-hmm.
you've got one of the characters who was a draft dodger in the 60s. And you have the other one who grew up to be a gay Republican black gentleman. Okay. And
he's the one that served.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason why they're friends is that back when they were very, very young, both their fathers died in an accident with one helping the other. And so they grew up as friends with this tragedy. And he brings that out. And it's really, really, the relationships are very complicated. There's not black and white. Neither one of them are perfect by any means or even moral to a certain degree. And it's wonderful. I love Happen Leonard. And anyone who's listening to this, three seasons, you gotta check them out. They ran on Sundance, and I'm sure you can find them somewhere.
Yeah, they're on
wonderful
DVD. Stuff. I think Netflix has all three seasons now. And the thing is James Purefoy and Michael K. Williams are top notch, just top notch. And for any Mad Men fans out there, Christina Hendricks makes a recurring appearance in the first season.
Yes. Yes, as the ex-wife, right, of Hap, I think, right? If I remember correctly.
Yep. Yeah. But you know, it's just a really fun little show. But you know, that's the thing that I have to say is that the Westerns that have come around, it's like the modern Westerns, when they work, they remember a sense of fun. Even Deadwood had a sense of fun. There is a beauty
oh, yeah.
and a humor to a lot of the very dark language in that series.
Oh, just look at Ian McShane. Some of those lines are so fucking funny.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Have any of you seen that new Western on, is it Showtime? The one about, I can't remember the name of it.
Oh God!
No, I don't have Showtime anymore.
I'm
blank. I don't have it. It had to do with trains. I'm blanking on the name. I just had it in my head and I can't think of it. Oh, never mind. There was one on the cable networks and I can't think of it. Darn it! Forget I said anything.
No, but before we wrap this up, I do want to go back a little ways and talk first, just to mention it. You had, as Carl mentioned, kind of the steampunk Western in terms of something like the Wild Wild West. And then you have a very clear descendant in terms of what I feel is actually a superior show. And that's no offense to Wild Wild West, which was a very fine series, but the one season wonder of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., which is, for those who don't know, it has Bruce Campbell in it, and he plays a bounty hunter who's brought in by the railroad to track down this notorious gang who happened to bust out themselves and their leader, who was being escorted to justice by Briscoe Sr., and during the escape, they kill Briscoe Sr., and So Briscoe's job is to bring in John Bly and all the members of the John Bly gang, and you have, you know, you have a lot of humor in the show. There's a dancer called Dixie Cousins. There's a scene where the tavern isn't open, the saloon isn't open, and he says, "Look, I just want something to eat." And they say, "Well, take your horse and ride up to the window, and we'll open it up and take your order there." So they invented ride up service, and some kid named Duncan punched out a hole and handed it to someone, and the character looks at him and says, "Thanks for the donut, Duncan." So it's got a lot of silly humor in it, but, you know, it's also got this sci-fi element to it where these Chinese workers find this mysterious orb in a mine, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it's just this really nifty series created by Carlton Cuse and Jeffrey Boehm. It ran for, I think, 27 episodes. It's on DVD. And it is just a wonderful series, but I'm going to let Carl talk about it because I know he loves it as much as I do.
Well, the thing about this series, let's face it, not Bruce Campbell, being Bruce Campbell, you know, and if you love Bruce Campbell, you need to see this, number one. Number two, it's got John Astin as Professor Wickwire.
Yep.
John Astin is a god when it comes to comedy. And let's not forget Billy Drago, who just passed away.
Yeah.
As John Bly. And Billy Drago looks like he comes from a different universe, which actually really works well with the character, trust me on this. And of course, the gentleman who played King Bowler, or Lord Bowler,
Julius Carey.
And he passed away young, unfortunately. But he was the you know, he starts out as this antagonist
foil
to Briscoe, but then they become partners, and it's so much fun. And the woman who plays Dixie, everything about this show, you know, does harken back quite a bit to Wild Wild West, and there's certainly even, you know, specific nods to that show in Briscoe County.
But oh, absolutely.
You're right.
This
one actually is more fun. It's just a blast. I love this show.
And we haven't even mentioned characters like Pete Hutter and Socrates Poole. And Pete's introduced admiring a painting on a railroad that's meant to trick the train like something out of a Wile E. Coyote cartoon. And you see this guy who looks like he's going to be the dumbest piece of shit in the world, probably can't put two words together. He's dressed all in black, looks kind of greasy. And then he starts launching into these very well-spoken, somewhat well-reasoned soliloquies on art and philosophy, and he just becomes seriously one of the best characters any Western has ever seen.
Yeah, he's wonderful. And the gentleman who plays Sebastian Poole, too.
Yeah, Socrates was great. Christian Clemenson is his name.
Yes. And he was on what? He was on L.A. Law, was it? I think.
The Practice. He had a recurring role on, I believe it was either Practice or Boston
maybe
Legal, maybe even both.
Yeah. But he's wonderful too. There isn't a weak link in that show. Not one. And goddamn Fox didn't know what the hell to do with it, and so they canceled it.
Yep, and they canceled it but at least the show ended on a great joke, where Bowler looks at a kid and the kid says, "Hey, where are you going?" And Bowler says, "Don't worry, we'll be back. We're just going on a little, let's call it a hiatus." Too bad it was a permanent hiatus.
Yep.
But you know, that's kind of what happened to the Western in general as we knew it. It went on a permanent hiatus, but we still get some great shows here and there. And I did want to finish with that, but I'm going to mention this and then we'll wrap it up. But did either of you see a series? It was among the first series ever on Paramount Network, and it was called Legend. And it had John DeLancey and Richard Dean Anderson in it, and DeLancey played a scientist and inventor, and Anderson played a dime novelist, and together they kind of created a reality for the character that Anderson's writer had created. Did either of you see that series by any chance?
Nope.
I saw a couple episodes. Only a couple. I don't remember much of it.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but you could tell that it had some potential, and I think if it had been given a real shot, they could have refined it. And that's the big thing with television consistently, and Carl mentioned this earlier, of course. You know, you can't necessarily trust television not to disappoint you in terms of, look, I have a show, I love it, oh shit, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived in constant fear of Babylon 5 ending before the story was finished. And I lived in constant fear of Homicide: Life on the Street dying on the vine because the ratings were always super low. Luckily, both those shows got to finish their stories, but those are the exceptions rather than the rule.
To say the least.
Can I toss out one footnote here?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know we're talking more about TV shows, but you mentioned John Astin. And if I don't mention these two, it'll be a bad thing. But John Astin starred in a couple of TV movies, but one I got to speak of particularly, 1972's Evil Roy Slade, which was a comedy western about the meanest villain in the West, who fell for he fell in love with this young, cute teenager, school teacher, you know, and he wanted her so bad, and he had to change his ways to become, you know, she wouldn't accept him. He was evil, so he had to become a nice guy, and but it was kind of a reverse thing where the bad guy was the lead character, Evil Roy Slade. It was a pilot, actually, but it was a TV movie, and it was a pilot, as far as I know. And it didn't get picked up for a series. A few years later, he tried another thing called The Brothers O'Toole. That was another comedy western. But anybody out there, Evil Roy Slade, grab it off Amazon for a couple of bucks on DVD, and it's with it. John Astin was great in that, and it's got Mickey Rooney and Henry Gibson, you know, and Dom DeLuise and Edie Adams and Milton Berle. How can you go wrong?
No, it's I love that movie. I freaking love that movie.
That's a movie that I've seen it too, and it's a lot of fun. I know I keep saying it's a lot of fun, but you know the westerns when they work, they're fun. Television, when it works, is fun. Even if it's serious, it's fun.
Yeah, but when you do if you're going to do a comedy western, and you do it right, and that one was done right, and I got, you know, it was in the spirit of Blazing Saddles, I guess, but I think it came before Blazing Saddles, but I don't know. All I know
is it's before. It's 1972.
Yeah, it's before, but it works, and it's on DVD, so buy it. It you know, it's average. It looks like a TV movie on DVD, but it's worth. It's good for a few laughs, and you won't regret it. So not a series, but it could have been a series if somebody had had a half a brain on it, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
So when you said John Astin, that movie came right into my head because I'm like, oh my God, yeah, the Evil Roy Slade. I got to mention it.
Yep. No, but I think that you know, the best thing we can say about the Western, maybe, and you guys might agree or disagree, is it had its time. It shone for quite a while, and even after it fell, there have still been some gems to be found. I think it's still a fertile field, but we need, you know, new writers and new takes to keep it going. You know, right now you have a sci-fi Western in terms of Westworld. TNT about 20 years ago did a horror Western called Purgatory. Briscoe County, of course, had a sci-fi element. So I think that, you know, we're going to be mostly left with hybrids. I think the days of the straight-up Westerns, like even Deadwood, are pretty much gone. But I might be wrong.
I think the last attempt at a serious Western was Magnificent Seven, you know, and that had Ron Perlman, and it still couldn't, you know, get any ratings. But, you know, it was a decent effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean on network TV, I'm saying, you know. And I know you guys like Deadwood a lot, but I must admit, and I'm probably should, you'll shame me for this. I've never seen an episode of Deadwood. I'm sorry.
I think you'd like it, actually.
I probably would. It just came out around the time when I couldn't afford HBO, and I never got around to watching it. So, you know, things happen.
I'll tell you this, with what I know about you and liking Westerns and, if you like any of the cast, it's got a fucking amazing cast. Beyond just Ian McShane, you've got Brad Dourif and Powers Booth, John Hawkes, Timothy Oliphant, Anna Gunn. There's just, I mean, I could go on for 10 minutes listing the great cast in that one, but it's worth picking up. Hell, I'm going to suggest to anyone that hasn't seen Deadwood, you need to see it. I've mentioned this before, but I have a top 300 list that I'm working on for a project, and currently Deadwood sits at number 12 on my all-time list. I think it's one of the absolute great shows.
Yeah, a series I was trying to think of isn't on Showtime. It's on AMC. It was called Hell on Wheels.
Yeah, Hell on Wheels was on AMC. Yeah, when you mentioned the train, yep.
Yeah,
No.
I saw some of the first season of that, and I did like it. I just never got to watch it consistently. But you know, I did think that had a lot of potential.
I believe that's one where they kind of had an idea where it was going, and I believe it did finally get a chance to wrap up on its own terms. But unless either of you have anything to add, I think it's probably just about time to wrap this one up. Do either of you have anything you'd like to add to the concept of the rise and fall of the TV Western?
Well, the only thing I would say is that I do agree we've got hybrids. One of the hybrids you didn't mention, of course, was Joss Whedon's show, Firefly, which is basically Western in space.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to find, I do see that there seems to be more of a rural sense coming back to TV to a certain degree. I mean, certainly things like Longmire and I'd like to see more of it. Okay. But the days of the, you know, morally black and white Western is long gone. Long gone.
And, you know, while I think it served its purpose and had its time, I can't say that it's necessarily a bad thing because, you know, it's art, and art's going to reflect the world around it. And it's not that the world was more black and white then, but certainly because of changing media and access to information and the world becoming a smaller place in terms of everyone having more immediate connections to one another, the way we see each other and the world around us has changed from the 50s and the culture, the societies that the original Westerns rose from.
Okay.
So I think that maybe, unless Alan has something to add in, that's going to be it for tonight.
No, I mentioned the last two things I wanted to say, and thank you.
Okay, well, with that, I will say that it's been a pleasure having you both, Carl and Alan, and that whenever I have my next show, it's
which
going...
Which will be 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks
yep.
from today.
2 weeks from today. It will be the first of two episodes on Doctor Who. And this is where I kind of want to announce a little bit of something how this show is going to operate. The idea on my show is going to be that 1 week you will have an in-depth look at a series, and another week you'll have a broad look at a topic within television. Today we did one of our broad looks. Next week, or next episode, we're going to do a broad look, and we're going to always alternate this. So next episode is going to be episode 4, and that will be the first of two episodes on Doctor Who. And that will be episodes 4 and 6 with that, with something, a little bit of a surprise sandwiched in between. I'm working on a very special little broad topic that Carl and I cooked up recently. So we'll announce that next week or next episode. So if Carl or Doc have anything they'd like to take us out with,
absolutely. So next week, next Friday, we are going to do, I'll be doing Carl's Cavern, and we're going to be doing a retrospective in memoriam of the films and work of Robert Forster, who passed last week, and someone who I've loved as an actor ever since I saw him in Banyan in 1971 was the first time I ever saw him on TV. We'll be talking about that. Doc, what do you have ready for Sunday?
Sunday there will not be a show. We are pushing things back because I'm doing some final paperwork and I will be moving once again. So just in case, just so everybody knows, I got a new job over in Central New York, moved 2.5 hours out from where I was previously, and I've been staying in an Airbnb, my contract with Airbnb expires within the next few days, so I've been frantically looking for an apartment, and I found one, and tomorrow is final paperwork, and then once that goes through, I'm moving everything in, like a crazy person.
Well, you know, you're a crazy person anyway. But yes, you'll be crazy busy is what you mean. Okay, good. So hopefully once you get settled in, we'll have a show next week. Perhaps we might have something during the week too.
We'll talk about that, Doc.
So anyway, that's what we have planned for Deviant Legion. So I'm going to kick it back to Adam. And Adam, why don't you take us out for the night?
Yep, I just want to thank you, and I just want to thank you, Carl, and you, Alan, and you, Doc, for joining me, and I want to thank any listeners out there for tuning in, and we'll be back around next week and the week after with more and more episodes. Carl, me, all your favorites. Have a good night, everyone.
Have a good night. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.